how do you as a woman speak up against microaggressions in the workplace?
Right.
How do you as a woman speak up for yourself and navigate your own pathway and then allow yourself not to be mistreated or find the triggering signal to say, I've had enough?
Welcome to Someone Like You, a podcast that highlights the experiences of women, immigrants, and people of color who are building empires, creating amazing things, and changing the world. Here, we celebrate underrepresented stories and unheard voices. Priya Soda is a career coach, leadership development consultant, and founder of Inner Gem. In this episode, we talk about mindset, leadership, navigating your career as a woman of color, and pushing back against the norms of her Indian culture. Enjoy.
So yeah.
Absolutely. But this was a good motivating conversation because you have to kind of be in the mood.
Right. I know. It's a good starter. Cool. Well, on that note, tell me what's something you're excited about right now?
Oh, okay. I am super excited about what's to come in the new year. I feel like 2021 is going to be a different feeling for a lot of us while, you know, we still most likely will be in quarantine. I think it's just the mindset of people. 2020 was very heavy. So I'm really excited about that. What I'm excited about with Inner Gem, because I'm doing coaching, consulting, and workshops, is launching a cohort for a group of women looking for career transitions. So whether it's looking for a new job, transitioning into new industry, feeling that imposter syndrome, you know, not sure what to do, how to go about it, you know, being new in a new industry, whether it's advocating for yourself in the workplace, negotiating a salary, whatever is going on in yourself with your career professionally, starting a cohort. So I'm so excited about that. That's going to be in January 2021. And yeah, I'm super excited for more workshops. I'm hearing there's a lot of need around conversations for women around confidence, owning your career, owning your professional choice, owning what you value, your purpose. And I'm seeing a lot of people have started to leave unhappy situations. So I'm really excited to see how that's going to go for many of the women that I'm working with.
Yeah, that's so necessary. I'm seeing all of those conversations all the time as well. So tell me, you launched Inner Gem recently. Tell me about the journey to get to Inner Gem.
Oh, yeah. So Inner Gem, this is awesome. So I launched Inner Gem officially in August, but I was doing it from about May. So almost about a little bit over 6 months ago now. My journey here. So I grew up, I'm Indian. My parents were actually born in Africa, but my grandparents are born in India. And culturally, I've always felt when I was growing up that I didn't belong professionally as a woman and the career choice that I was making. And so growing up, while I have supported parents, it was never, you know, never an issue at home. I've actually been taught from my parents, pursue your dreams. I felt like I struggled growing up in middle school, in high school, and in college talking about my work and who I was. So I had a hard time really kind of connecting with people that looked like me. And so I actually, you know, starting in college, I became such a personable human connector person of all different cultures and all people because I felt like I wanted that community. And it's interesting, I pursued nonprofit management and I did it because I liked helping people. I liked the study of people. I liked connecting and I liked helping people. But so much of my time was spent trying to prove to people in my own culture that I can make something of myself doing nonprofit management because I was constantly told, you know, unless you're a doctor or a lawyer, people don't give you attention. And when I say that, it wasn't like someone was saying that to your face. It was more like I would go out to parties or I would go places. And the first thing somebody asks you is, what do you do? And you say nonprofit management. And I've had people just walk away. And you know, it hits, it gets to you, right? It gets to you at your core. But there's something in me that I didn't recognize at the time that I recognize now, was that just such a fighter to say, okay, well, whatever, like on to the next, right? I don't care. I'm not going to switch my career for somebody else. And so I pursued my master's in nonprofit management in New York City. And I felt it even more then, because there was a huge, Indian population there. And I really felt it, right? Going out there, trying to date, like it was heavy. Mm-hmm. And it just pushed me more and more to want to prove something to people. And what I found that I was doing was that I was pushing myself into nonprofit management, and I had lost the reason why I was doing it. Because I was doing it to prove something rather than doing it because I loved it. Mm-hmm. And so in New York, after, earning my master's, I started working at a nonprofit, and in 3 months I got fired. And I like gave myself 10 minutes to cry on the streets, right? On the city and city streets, gave myself 3 minutes. I was like, this is all I'm doing. And then I'm going to go home. And I couldn't understand why. It wasn't about my work ethic. It wasn't about anything I did. But I realized I just wasn't showing up for myself at work. And you could, when you put it out there that you're not happy, people receive it, right? So your first 3 months on the job, if you're not happy that quickly, it's obvious. So it wasn't about anything about my work ethic. I think it was just the universe telling me, like, hey, this isn't right for you, and we're going to redirect you. Mm-hmm. So I started, it's actually funny. This is a small story I actually haven't thought about in a very long time, but I was looking for work, and I was like, what am I going to do? I started working part-time at a camp. I was putting on it, like, as a program director for a camp. And I was working out at a club out there, a very famous club, New York Sports Club. And one of the trainers there was like, hey, you know, I told him I taught Zumba. And so I'm a Zumba instructor, and I was looking for more work for Zumba. I was already teaching 5 classes a week. I wanted to teach 10. I needed to make money. I don't know why I was still wanting to live in New York, but I was. You know, I'm at the gym and I'm working out, and I'm asking this guy, like, are you hiring for Zumba instructors? And he's like, no, we're hiring for personal trainers. Do you have your certifications? And I did, I had all my certifications. And I said, no, like, I don't want to be a personal trainer. He's like, well, just come back and talk about Zumba. Come back tomorrow at like 2 o'clock. We'll talk about your Zumba. So I'm going into this, what I think is like an interview for teaching Zumba. So I'm already going in the mindset of, I don't want to be a personal trainer. I don't want to be a female personal trainer. And I'm going in that mindset. And so basically I didn't want the job, but I was confident in my abilities, because I knew, you go in that mindset of like not being like, aggressive about it or desperate about it. You kind of go in that mindset of like, this is calm and easy, and I'm just going to be me. Right. And immediately it turned into a job interview, and he said right off the bat, he said, I want to hire you, not because you want this job, but because you don't want this job so much that you're showing in your real self. And I was like, wow. And he's like, you're interviewing me. Do you realize that? And I was interviewing him. And that's how job interviews should be. You should be interviewing companies, right?
Right.
And I actually took the job. I worked there for a year to help me stay in New York. I wouldn't say it was my favorite job in terms of, you know, the logistics about it, because there's a lot of things within personal training industry, you know, trainers go through. But I loved it because I was connected to humans. I got to learn stories about people, and then I got to see them grow based on my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I left New York, I came back and I went right back into nonprofit management for, you know, safety for a job. And I worked for a nonprofit for 5 years, worked my way up. And I'll tell you, my lessons getting fired, I worked really hard. I was like, I'm never going to let something like that happen to me again. And I really learned how to ask questions at work. I learned how to communicate to my boss when I was feeling a certain way about, you know, mm-hmm. my work or how work was treating me. I was very clear, direct. And I think that as a woman was something I learned about myself. How to be direct about my needs, mm-hmm. in a way that is communicative, not lengthy, I guess for lack of a better word, for people to see, it didn't come across emotional. It came across, this is what I want and this is what I deserve.
Right.
After that, I decided I'm going to leave this job. And I was still on this path of trying to prove to people who I am. And that path you know, at that moment, I was like, this is awesome. I'm at the top of the world. I applied for a job to be an executive director at a nonprofit, and I got the job, and I didn't even fit. I can tell you, I didn't even fit 50% of the job qualifications. I think I was at like 30% job requirements. But I got the job because, again, I went in there with the mindset of like, okay, I want this, but like, let me just try this out, right? This isn't something that I'm like dying to have, because I know if I don't get this, I can work harder. Like, it's a high title to get. It's a leadership role, right? That I hadn't been in. So I was like, I'm just going to go in there and try it out. That's how I've always been. Let me just try it. And so I went in that interview like with all this confidence in the world, because I wasn't trying really hard to get it. And right. It was the same thing where the founder was like, I want to give you this job. And like, I felt like you were interviewing me. I was like, that is such an interesting concept. So I kept on to that. I hold on to that, right? And I got hired, and I went to my first board meeting, and I told one of the women on the board, there was only like two women on the board at the time. And I said, I can't believe I got hired. I don't know how I got hired with my resume. And she said, would a man ask the same question? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think so. And she's like, so never ask yourself that. You got hired because somebody saw something in you. And you're the right person for this job. So I really took that to heart, and possibly too early on in my job, I took that to heart, because I left within a year. I felt like, you know, I was on top of the world in terms of being able to now go out to events, community events, and telling people that I was the executive director. But Liz, I could tell you inside, I didn't feel on top of the world. I felt like a fake. I felt like this, I did all this to prove to other people, but I lost somewhere down the road. I lost what I was really trying to do. I actually don't like this work. Mm-hmm. I love helping people. I love working in nonprofits, and I have the knowledge to help people in nonprofits, but I don't like doing the actual work in nonprofits.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was like sitting there every day going, why am I doing this? I had lost time for myself, time for my family. I wanted to build a family. And so I quit, and I started working. I looked for a full-time job so that would allow me to launch my own business, which is InnerGem. And I put the longest story short, I put it all together from personal training, what I loved about that, what I learned from getting fired in New York, what I learned about realizing that nonprofit was not for me. I love human connection. I love freedom, and I love being creative, and I love helping people. And those four things, I told myself, what do people come to me for? And people come to me for how to get a job, how do I build my resume, and networking. Can you connect me to someone in your network? So I thought, let me just launch that, because it's something so true to me. And that's how I launched InnerGem. I'm doing coaching, I do workshops, and I actually do some nonprofit consulting because I still love that space.
It is so crazy when you say it, you know, sequentially like that. It all does like perfectly fit and make sense, even though I'm sure along the way it didn't feel like it was going to all make sense in the end. but I love that approach of let me take the bits of each thing that I love and bring them together. And also identify what am I good at and what do people naturally come to me for. That is so smart, and very, very strategic of you. So clearly there's this common thread, I think, and from some of our past conversations of leadership, the qualities of a leader, that are aspirational for you, but also that you possess. Have you always been that way? Were you a natural leader, like even as a young kid?
Yeah, leadership is so important, that word. Okay, so I am somebody who's, let's just say, what in the workplace, the one thing that can get me angry is terrible leadership. and that's what led me to do everything in my life. I grew up doing ballet and dancing since I was three. And I always kind of took the role of stepping back and watching others do their work, and then coming in to provide support guidance. I think just starting at the early age, in high school, I was volunteering and working with youth, and I started leading a group of volunteers. In high school, we also had a class called Virtual Enterprise, where it was like a business. And so you had to set it up. And I don't know what it is. It might come from my dad. My dad was like the director of marketing for a large company for a while. And he always had the best communication, public speaking skills. He always talked about his work and I just loved it. I looked at him. I'm like, I want to be that. And I'm so much like my dad. But in Virtual Enterprise, we started our class had to start a business, and we called it Osmosis, and we started a fake water company. We were selling Arrowhead bottles, but putting Osmosis as a label and selling at our basketball games. Right. And there was 5 leadership positions, director of marketing, director of sales, or, CEO. And they were like, who wants to apply for this? We're going to get actual people, professionals come in and interview you. And I was 17 and I was like, I want to apply for director of sales. And I applied and I got the position. And I thought, like, that was my first interview. And I thought, wow, I'm really good at this. Mm. And I don't know where that part comes from, but I know a lot of this stems from me feeling like I've had to explain myself to people in my culture. Wow. A lot of it has, and it has never had to been like, here's an excuse. It's more like, no, this is who I am. And I'm not going to follow that path. Always, I once had an uncle tell my dad, like, why doesn't Priya go to medical school? I can send her with my daughter. And I remember that moment so much. It was like 17, I think, or 18. And I was like, why do I have to? No, this is my life, right? This is my life. Absolutely not. And I developed my story at such an early age. And I think that's why I've had this ability to talk and to mentor and to be there for people, especially women, because it's like, I understand it is hard as a woman when society has so many other different expectations of you and impressions of you. Your culture has all these expectations of you. It is hard to speak up and to own your own voice. And so for me, leadership, it's such a sensitive topic for me sometimes because, so much of your life is spent at work. If you are abusing your staff's time that they're giving you, if you are not listening to your staff, because really your staff to me they're way more experienced than the people on leadership for most places. Yeah. And if you're not listening, you're giving them that opportunity to show that. First of all, it's affecting your bottom line. Second of all, your staff is spending so much of their time working for you. And if you see that, right, why would you abuse that? Why would you take advantage of that? And why would you try to tell somebody something when you can hear what they have to offer? So what I took with InnerGem was it's so hard, Liz, to like change that mindset. I was doing diversity, equity, inclusion work with companies before this. And it's kind of a dead end game because you're training, but where does it go? Because you're actually training the people that know what you're talking about, right? So like you're training the employees and they're like, yeah, I already know this, but I feel this way here. How do we change this?
Right.
So it's like, you train someone in HR, they're like, yes, we do want to pay attention to this. We are focused. We signed up for this training, so we care. Like, where does this lead us? And then where it leads you is to leadership who oftentimes are not attending the training.
Yeah.
Or you have to get strategy buy-in. And I thought, okay, for me, it was personally a dead end game. Well, I don't want to give up on that work. And I think there's some amazing people doing that work. For me, it was, how do you, as your own individual agency, navigate it? And that's where I took InnerGem. It's how do you, as a woman, speak up against microaggressions in the workplace?
Right.
How do you, as a woman, speak up for yourself and navigate your own pathway? And then allow yourself not to be mistreated or find the triggering signal to say, I've had enough. Because those are the messages that are actually going to make a long-term change for yourself because you know how to handle it and it's your mindset. And number two, people will see that when you leave them. Companies will see it when you leave and they'll know that a change has to be made. Yeah, so that's, that's kind of the angle that I took. And that's like you're building yourself as your own leader. Because if you have that mindset, you have now created your own leadership in yourself.
Wow. All right. There are several things I want to touch on from that because that was so great. The first, so when you're working with women who are dealing with all of these different pressures, expectations, limitations within their system, you know, how much of it is the right mindset? And how much of it is having a skill set or techniques or tools to navigate those situations? For example, you mentioned learning how to communicate what you want and need very effectively, but without all of that emotion. So what's that balance between getting your mindset equipped to deal with this as a woman versus learning the techniques?
Such a great question. I'm going to give you this answer. It is 120% mindset. It's all mindset. Because people ask me this question in coaching sessions, and I throw it back to them and say, okay, so you have all these questions in your head. I don't know if I should be doing this. I don't know how to do this. I don't have experience with this. You're already set in that mindset, and sometimes you can operate. Sometimes that mindset leads you down a fixed mindset where you're like, okay, all this has to happen, but I don't have all this. And sometimes you easily then redirect yourself elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Like I want to negotiate a salary for myself, but I don't know how to do it. And so I'm just going to ask. And if they say no, it's going to be okay. That's a fixed mindset, right? You've held yourself back. So everything is mindset. The question, the reason being is because you got to ask yourself, well, if you don't know, how do you find out? Right? It's having the mindset, knowing that I can always find out how to do something, but how do I do that? What are the technical skills I need? How does my resume and cover letter look? How do I communicate this? How do I learn how to do public speaking? What are the technical stuff that I need? And then your mindset kind of kicks in and says, okay, Priya, well, you're really good at this stuff and you really don't know this stuff. So how do I find out? And then if it's a funding thing, right? If it has to do with money, like you need to, let's say you want to sign up for Toastmasters, right? Because amazing public speaking practice. You want to look at your priorities. That's another mindset shift. What are my priorities? Where can I sacrifice a little bit so I can fund that? Something I say to people who are starting their own business is look at the stuff, write down on a list, look at the stuff that you're good at and that's easy for you and takes a little bit of time. So I'll give my InnerGem as an example. I was launching InnerGem and it's like that first feeling of like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? This is hard. Like, I don't have everything I need. I don't have all the technical knowledge. I don't know how to set up a website. I don't know how to do all the stuff. So for like a week, it held me back, right? I'm not going to lie. I was like, okay, well, I don't know how to do this. It's going to take me longer than expected. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, no, 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 Priya, change your mindset. Fix this. You got to do this. This is what you want to do. So I wrote down everything I was good at and everything that was easy and wouldn't take much time. And for me, I already had a few clients who were interested. So it was coaching. For me, it was creating my coaching content. And it was also launching, you know, my Instagram, just little details, right? And then I was like, okay. Then the second list things that you're good at, but is going to take a little bit more time, right? That's your middle list. So for me, it was launching workshops. I'm good at launching workshops. It's going to take a little bit more time because it's content and curriculum heavy. And strategy. I'm good at strategy. It's going to take a little bit more time, but I do want to strategize my plan, right? That was what was in my head. Mm-hmm. The third thing is, what is the stuff? These are your threats, right? When you're doing a SWOT analysis, what are the stuff that you are not good at? It's going to hold you back. It's going to be heavy on your mind. You're going to stress out about and takes more time. And yes, we can all figure out how to do it, but it might change your launch of your business from 6 months to a year, right? So that's that list where I say, okay, now I have this list here. I have to prioritize this list. And for me, the number one thing was a logo, a name, and branding. I was like, I suck at this stuff. And I recognize I could learn it, but it's something I didn't want to spend the time doing.
Sure.
So, and I could have done it, but would I have felt confident in it? I don't know. I probably would have felt better having an expert helping me with this. Right.
Right.
So I was like, okay, let me prioritize my money because this is a priority. If I don't have a logo, I don't feel comfortable having a website. That was a pathway to me. If I didn't have a name, I wouldn't even have a coaching business. So I had to get that first. That's when I said to myself, well, this is where you put your money. You put your money in that third bucket, right?
Right.
That's the bucket that's going to get you going. And I'll say this out loud. Thanks to you, Liz and Lyric, I was able to get my logo and branding done because I was able to, you know, hire you to do it. So, but that's how I see this answer is when somebody asks that question, it's so much of the work that you're doing is technical, right? But if you can ease the barriers and the blocks in your mind on how to get to that, right? Sometimes a question I'm going to give you is somebody asked me the other day about, I don't know if I should be doing a data analytics class. Like, I don't know if I should be doing this. Is this necessary in me transitioning into a new career? Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know. You're asking the wrong person. Who would you ask? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, you have an array of options on LinkedIn. Who would you ask?
Right.
You know? And she was like, interesting. So why don't you ask somebody who's doing exactly what you want to do and ask them what they think? And it changed so much. It just changed so much, right? Because she's like, oh, right. I'm spending so much time asking myself, do I need to study this? Do I not need to study this? Is this worth it? If you're spending all that time, ask somebody.
So is this like a mental paradigm shift? Is it a habit that you build, like this kind of reframing and mindset shift? Because it sounds like, one, it's realizing that you have the option to do that. but then also based on what you described with Energem, it sounds like something you'd continually do as situations arise.
You know, this is such a great question. I think it takes practice. This is a habit shift. And what I mean by the habit shift part of it is we all are going to go through tough days. We're all going to operate off of a fixed mindset naturally as a reset button for a lot of things. We're all going to struggle. We're all going to shut off. I shut off, I think, 2 weeks ago because I was having my moment. We're all going to go through it. But the habit change comes into what do you do after you get through that, right? So what I like to do is how you practice this. So if I know, oh my gosh, today is a rough day. I don't feel it. I'm not there. I'm struggling. I'm stressing out. How am I going to get more clients? All those questions. It's the habit that I placed into what do I do when I feel that way? And I've already told myself when I feel that way, I will choose to shut off. I will have my coaching calls, my client calls, and or I might have to reschedule because I don't want to show up not my best self. So the habit is that practical, logical sense of you that goes in and says, okay, when I'm having a bad day, the best thing for me to do is to work out and shut off. Mm. And that's it. Other than that, you have to live through the moments of that, whatever you're feeling, right? Even if it's feeling stuck, you have to live through it. But when I shut off, I tell myself, I'm going to ride this out. And that's the habit change. It includes, you know, when it comes to shifting your mindset about applying to jobs, you're reaching out to people. The one thing I like to tell people is always remember you're dealing with human beings. There's still a people connection involved with everything you're doing. So a question somebody always asks me is like, oh, networking on LinkedIn. This is one I get all the time. I can't tell you, Liz, every single time. But I don't want to bother them. I don't want to feel like a burden.
I feel that way all the time.
Yeah. Well, then I'll throw this back to you. If somebody reached out to you, how would you feel, Liz?
I guess it depends how they reached out, but if it was genuine, I'd feel like I wanted to chat with them or help them out.
So why wouldn't someone want to feel that with you?
I don't know. It's definitely just a fear, you know?
But that question is something I ask clients, right? Is to think about it. Like, if someone reached out to you the way you're planning on reaching out, and that's the question to ask is how are you reaching out? Is it coming across saying, hey, do you have jobs available? I'm looking for a job. Versus, I am in a career transition. I'm unsure of how to get there. This is new for me, and I'm looking for advice or support or anything that you could offer me. If someone came to you in that way, if you know you would take that call, then that's your indicator to say, then I'm just going to try it with somebody else. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask them. Because if I will take the call, chances are somebody else might. And if they don't, you go to somebody else.
Sure.
And so that's a habit in place too, is to throw it back on you and to practice the scenario. If this happened to me, what would I do?
That's really smart. That's a great reframe. So did you get to this point of mindset through your various experiences going through the nonprofit world? Was it an influence of your experiences in fitness and that kind of transformation? How did you get to this point personally where you recognized this ability to change your mindset and then change your actions afterwards?
You know, it's something I always often struggle thinking about, is how did I get to this place? I think it comes from, first of all, it's my parents. It's my dad. He thinks this way. He's raised, I have a brother, a sister, and me, and he's raised us. To be honest, I'll say I grew up never feeling that because I was a woman, I couldn't do something. So my dad raised us with that mentality, like, well, if my brother's going to learn how to change a tire, my daughter's going to learn how to change a tire, right? My son is going to learn how to change a tire. My daughter's going to learn. And I think it started there. I will say dance had a lot to do with it. At the early age of three, I was performing in shows and recitals. And so I'd have to go from school to dance. And so that developed discipline in me. Mm-hmm. I was going 4 days a week at some point, you know, from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, I'd go home and have to do my homework. And so I had that very competitive mindset. I was very competitive. I wanted to go to dance. I wanted to be in the front row. I wanted to come home. I wanted to finish my homework. I wanted to do everything. And I think that really develops your mindset, because for a lot of people, that question of time comes up, right? I don't have time to do something. And I think because I distorted this at 3 years old, I knew time was subjective. I knew I had time to do something. I was at 5 years old, 7 years old, going to elementary school, taking a dance class, coming home, getting my homework done, watching TV, spending time with my family, doing that all the way up until end of high school, still minored in dance in college, performed in dance in college. I was doing it always. So I guess my mindset always knew how to shift and maneuver time based on my priorities. Mm-hmm. And so I would definitely give it to that. I think also, it goes back to my culture, like having to, it wasn't an easy route as a woman having to talk about what I did. And so there's a lot of times I'd come home and I'd feel disappointed. There are times I lied to people. I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm in medical school, just because I wanted to actually see what a conversation with someone would be like. Right. But I didn't like that about me. You know, there was something about me that was like, A, I cannot be fake. You can read it off my face. And B, I'm sticking true to who I am. And if that person doesn't see it, then goodbye. So I think that really shaped me. Because I met a lot of Indian women growing up, not specifically now as much, but it's interesting. A lot of them now who pursued what their parents wanted them to pursue or went down a certain path. Some of them now are changing 10 years later.
Really?
And I hear often, for me, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the person that's making not as much money, you know, et cetera. And back in the day, that was the thought. But I hear from some of them sometimes, and I'll hear them say, wow, like, I'm so inspired by the work that you do. I wish I had done a different route. I wish I had XYZ done, you know, this and that. But when I was doing it, Liz, the representation was not there in my nonprofit.
I believe it.
My career. And like, I had not worked under anyone that was an Indian woman. I had not worked with anyone that was an Indian woman. My grad school, well, majority, 90% of people were women. I didn't see me in them. And so maybe there was a sort of feeling of like, I can be the only one doing this, and that's empowering. I don't know.
So I wanted to ask about that. So you touched on your experiences in diversity, equity, inclusion, and how really what you feel is required, I'm going to take a leap, is really more of systemic change or change in the leadership versus change mm-hmm. in the employees. So if you're a person of color, if you're a woman of color, specifically navigating these workplaces with bias, with systemic racism built into them, how do you navigate that on an individual basis? I know that's a big question.
I've been through it. First and foremost, it's going there, you know, there's a systematic approach to it, right? So understanding and knowing who are the right people to talk to about it. There's a fear, and I think in a virtual environment, more than anything, it's going to be harder. We can often sit in our silos and have a conversation that, you know, I was having a conversation, and, you know, I felt like I had a supervisor that was very microaggressive to me. And then I'd leave a conversation virtually and I'd be like, whoa, how did that feel? And then my fiance would take the brunt of my emotions and complaining. And a lot of the work that you can do is make a case for yourself and the work that you're doing. And making a case for yourself is not, well, I feel like I'm spending 15 hours a day working here. No, it's factual. Like, how can you pull together the facts? I've developed this, you know, strategy for this company. I've put together this project. I've managed this team. I've led it to this goal and we exceeded by this many percent. It's really putting together, documenting the work that you're doing in a company is going to be the first thing you want to do, because anytime, you know, it can be scary. Sometimes you can feel like if I speak up, something is going to happen against me. So you always want to have that stuff documented. And that stuff documented really helps speak to your confidence. Another thing you want to do is join. A lot of companies will have employee resource groups, but join them, but don't just join them and be a participant. Join them and be a strategist. So ask if they have opportunities to sit on like a committee seat, a decision-making seat, or an opportunity to speak to leadership about the work that you're doing. Constantly when you're sitting on those committees, another advice I have is continually challenge those committees. Those are those committees where they for the most part will be safe spaces to talk about this work. Something that I do in a current committee that I'm on is every time we bring up an idea, we bring up a new protocol that we want to place. Maybe it's a survey, maybe it's a professional development training on diversity and inclusion, whatever it might be. I always throw back with the question, well, do we have leadership buy-in and how are we going to get that? Because you may not be the one talking to leadership about it, but that question is going to keep coming up. And then whoever's taking those notes further, they have to answer that question somehow,
right?
They ignore you. And so there has to be some plan in place to get leadership buy-in. So now you've just kind of opened up some doors. The other piece to this now is sometimes it might not work. There are companies where it may not get to that point and you're still going to feel the way you're feeling. You can have an HR complaint. You can talk about it. You may see that they're not hiring people that look like you. They still might be. I know somebody who is an Indian woman working in a tech team and she's the only female and they're still constantly hiring white men. She's new in this company and it's been only 5 months. And so she, is choosing to document her work right now. She's doing that first step, documenting the work that she's doing mm-hmm. and showing how amazing she is, because that's the one thing we can do is to show, like, you know, you hired me as a woman and I can kick ass. And you'll see that. I don't have to prove to anyone, but I'm going to do my best work like I will always do. Mm-hmm. And so what she has done though, is she started to say, like, in casual happy hours and in moments and being like, it would be awesome if, like, there was another woman on the team. You know, bringing that up, sometimes people just, it's, you know, it's unconscious. Some people don't even recognize that that's happening.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing is they need to hire someone so quickly that they'll hire the top candidate just happens to be a white male in the deck of papers, right? Not the top candidate as an experience. Cause
right.
I would really challenge that, but, but yeah. These are the people that might be coming them through referrals. They might be coming to them because they're looking at whatever they might be looking at, their name is standing out somehow, right?
Right.
Or it's an easy way, it's easy just to hire. That's what it is. So that, yeah. And at some point you have to ask yourself, like, is this for me? Because if it's not, if it's causing you more pain, there are companies out there that you can work at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great, 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 great advice and very timely and important right now. I'm going to ask the flip side of that question. If you are in a leadership position, what are things that you can do to be more inclusive, to empower all people on your team to build a more diverse team. And some of these might be obvious, but since you have the opportunity to share, what would you recommend as a leader in an organization?
This is perfect timing. I was actually thinking about this yesterday. So I'm going to use this in a virtual space right now.
Sure.
Leadership is not going to know who their staff is as much as they used to when you see them in person, who their staff are, right?
Right.
For a lot of people, they're getting hired and they may never meet their boss in person.
That's ever. Crazy, but it's true.
It might not ever happen because you might be working remotely on the other side of the country. So what do you do? Right. This is where the quantitative data is important. If you are rolling out surveys to get to know your staff, the most obvious answer is read them, right? Don't have your assistant read them. Don't have someone in HR just read them. Leadership, read them. Mm-hmm. Sit down, read them. Now, in those surveys, you want to ask your staff something, because this is the part that's going to be so life-changing is, yes, you're hired to do this job. In many companies, there's going to be 500 people doing the same job. But do those 500 people all have the same skills? No. So do those 500 people all probably have side hobbies and projects and no other stuff? Yes. Right? Can they all bring something else to offer to your company? Yes. So ask and find out the additional stuff your staff love to do. What do they do on the side? What do they do for fun? What drives them? What makes them happy and purposeful and passionate, especially now, because people are moving into tech jobs. And a lot of those people that are moving into tech jobs and transitioning, they did something else that they were so good at. And unfortunately, that position may not exist anymore, or that industry was affected. Right? People in marketing, they're so amazing. And a lot of marketing people are going into doing Salesforce admin or doing tech roles. You know, what about their marketing experience? Right? So find out who is working in your team and how can you leverage that? Because companies will always, and now I'm not going against consultants because I am one, but companies will always go look for a consultant to do work. Well, if you want to help your bottom line, right? Why aren't you asking the people in your team?
Right.
In your staffing? Why don't you give them that opportunity for leadership? So that's one thing that always comes to mind, is getting to know them more on a deeper level. Another thing is there are opportunities, something that I have seen done before in staff meetings, especially for smaller companies, organizations, or nonprofits, is before staff meetings, rolling out an anonymous Jamboard, like a Google Doc, or like an anonymous link, a Google survey, or however you can do it, that's very anonymous, and asking staff to ask hard questions for leadership before a staff meeting. And then gathering those questions and then having those questions be asked to leadership in the staff meeting, but nobody knows where those questions come from. Mm-hmm. That is really helpful because there are a lot of people who are scared. So it helps remove fear. Sometimes the one I was involved in a few years ago, the question was, you know, what's happening with staff raises? Because they had just not happened for 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
Something people were so scared to ask, even their direct bosses. And just by that one protocol, we all got an answer. So there's that's important. The other thing is like start setting up, start paying attention to, look at the data, who exists in your company, and fill in the gaps. And what I mean by that is a lot of companies, they hire diversity at entry level, but they don't develop a pipeline up to leadership.
Yep.
And so that's a massive struggle. And so how are you developing a pipeline for everyone into leadership? And how are you mindful of those experiences? Where are the gaps? So if you're a company that's marketing in a certain community, does your marketing team reflect the community that you're marketing to? Right?
Yep.
Maybe not. So how are you filling in somebody to do that? It helps your ROI at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, it also is more of a meaningful, impactful work that you're doing. Yeah, I hope I answered your question that way. I mean, the biggest thing is to be present, to be empathetic, to listen, and to actually show that you're listening, because that's the one thing people see with leadership. And I hear it all the time. Yeah, they're there. Yeah. We say it in meetings, but nothing comes of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very, very common experience, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Well, thank you for that. That was really helpful and great. Great ideas that I think so many people can implement pretty easily. You know, I don't think that's a big energy shift to start to make some of those changes. So I want to ask you, as you're navigating all of these different roles that you play, you're dealing with a lot of people's emotions and their challenging experiences and helping them navigate that. How do you stay inspired?
I stay inspired by reading. I read a lot of articles. I read a lot of books. I'm actually doing something called the Design Thinking, Design Your Life book right now. It's a workbook on designing your life, but I'm using it for my business. Design thinking is really about designing what you want and launching and testing in sprints without feeling heavy, without strategizing first. It's really just doing something and coming back, revisiting what happened and then trying it again. So continuously trying. So that inspires me is the books and the activities that I do. I read a lot about, I'm on LinkedIn all the time because that's where my job, that's where my business is really focused on. So reading posts, engaging when I need to feel inspired, I'm finding people on LinkedIn that are doing the similar work that I'm doing. And I have calls with them to find out what motivated them to get into this field. That motivation is constantly, you know, reigniting for me. I like to build my own women's community of entrepreneurs too. So I already have about 5 or 6 women that I talk to often. That helps me stay inspired. To me, the one thing is human connection. And right now, more than anything, human connection. And then, I mean, dance inspires me, right? Dance, it might be the only thing that I'm doing that I don't think about anything else.
Yep.
And so when I'm like, I need to just shut my head off, I need my brain to stop, I have to dance.
Yeah, I love that.
And I would say that that's one thing I would suggest everyone figure out. What is something that you do that your brain can shut off?
I absolutely support that. it's a really powerful experience and just something that's so necessary with all of the uncertainty in the world, the stress that we all have, to just be able to be in flow for a little while and have that kind of peace and pleasure.
Yeah, Liz, what do you do? What do you do?
It was basketball was my whole life has been the thing, but with the pandemic, I can't do that. So it was funny. I was actually just thinking about this last night. I've had to find new things. And so the replacement for me has been surfing or like swimming in the ocean. That's very cool. So I've been doing that like once or twice a week. Just go and like be in the water. And then I definitely get that sense when I paint or when I cook. So just kind of finding my little outlets and working them into my routine.
That's amazing.
So I did want to ask, you talked about not having that representation in your career and seeing an Indian woman in positions of leadership. So how did it feel to you to see Kamala Harris, a Black and Indian woman, elected vice president of our country?
Oh my gosh, there's so many feelings to this. I'll be honest, like at first, so I have no problem saying I voted for Biden and Harris, right? But at first I wasn't quite sure about her because I knew some of her controversial beliefs in the past and some of the stuff she's done.
Sure.
So at first I was like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Of course, I'm still voting for them, but I was like, I don't know. And then I was reading into it. I was listening to some of her stories. And oh God, Liz, this is such a great question. So I am Indian and my boyfriend, my soon to be husband in a few days, he's from Belize and very passionate about the Jamaican culture. And so I thought, it hit me when I have a daughter, if I have a daughter or a son, they are going to look at that person. They're going to look at Kamala Harris and be like, that person isn't even just half of me. That person is full of me. I am fully half, right? I was like, that is so interesting, right? But then I delved deeper and I was like, okay, she's a good person. And then I started thinking more about myself. And I was like, I can understand her history, her family history. I can understand why she's made some of the choices she's made being an Indian woman. She was raised by her Indian family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can understand some of the decisions she's made based on the struggles, the challenges. Well, it's, and I say all these challenges, I'm absolutely proud of being Indian, right? And I want to be very clear on that. But I can understand her beliefs, some of the decisions she's probably made, even in her position, just because of the way she must have been raised as a child too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just deeply connected with that, with the idea of like, I went through such, it's just now coming to me where I'm really owning my identity.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you, there are times where I was like, I don't want to talk to another Indian woman again, because I just feel so judged by my culture. Right. And so I would not talk to anyone. I was like, I'm not going to make any more Indian friends. But now I'm just so deeply involved in it. I want to partner with Indian women. I want to be friends with them. I want to help support their work. I want to coach them. But before, I wasn't feeling that way. I had such an identity crisis. And so when I look at Kamala Harris, I'm like, I don't know what there is about, there's some personal connection that I have to who she is. And I'm just so proud of it, to know that my kids could look up one day and be like, you know, if she becomes president one day, just being vice president, like the first woman in office is going to be what my kids look like. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that's truly amazing.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And congratulations in advance on your upcoming wedding.
I know. I do want to say something interesting about that. I actually just filmed a video on this. It's before the pandemic started, we got engaged 1 week before. And I constantly would say words like, I can't ever live without traveling. I can't ever live without going to my gym. I can't ever have a wedding unless all my family from England is there, right? It's like, remember those memes that would come out that was like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, you know? And everyone would be like, oh yeah, that's funny. Like, imagine life without going to the gym.
Right.
And okay, all of a sudden the world was like, well, all this stuff you said you can't do, we're going to test you. And I'm having a wedding with 10 people in my fiance's backyard, and I couldn't be happier. Like,
right.
That mindset, right? That, like, I want people to hear that. It's like that mindset shift of the, when you remove the layers of all the external factors that get into place, and you actually think internally about the purpose of things, you can do anything.
Oh yeah.
And it's so interesting. So I'm having a wedding with 10 people, and I'm so happy, and people I love will be joining on Zoom, and that's all that matters to me.
I am so happy for you. And I think I'm so glad you shared that too. That's obviously a huge and necessary mindset shift that we're all experiencing in our own way. But again, it comes back to something you've talked about a lot, which is your priorities. And the priority here is that you guys love each other, and you're going to spend your lives together, which is so exciting.
Of course. Yeah. And there will always be a chance to have a party.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. We're going to finish off with a little lightning round.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right.
Are these one word answers or are these two word answers?
Just the first thing that comes to your head.
Okay.
What scares you?
Snakes, but also not doing something that makes me happy.
Mm. What are you most proud of?
Launching Inner Gem.
Yeah. When are you at your best?
When I'm dancing after a great workout, and when I'm having a conversation with someone that I can just deeply connect on a different level.
That's so good. How do you define success?
Waking up every day, enjoying what you're about to do with the people that you love, and knowing that you've lived purposefully.
I love that. And finally, how do you want to be remembered?
Someone that helped people help themselves.
Yes, I think that will absolutely be the case for you. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed
enjoyed my chat with Priya. I had the absolute pleasure of working with her on the brand strategy for Energem. And as we worked through her story, the big idea we landed on is that she empowers people to take ownership of their life through her workshops, coaching, and training. So now you've gotten a glimpse of exactly how she does it. You can check out more at energemworks.com or follow her on Instagram at energemworks. As always, I'm your host, Liz Marie, brand strategist helping women and BIPOC entrepreneurs overcome chaos and level up your brand so you can shatter glass ceilings and build generational wealth. You can connect with me on Instagram at Liz Marie Strategy or visit LizMarieStrategy.com for more resources, stories, and tips for creatives and entrepreneurs, or to nominate someone to be featured on the show. Until next time, stay badass.